Hey there. Are you tired of waiting for the next episode of It's Probably Not Aliens? Well, we've got some good news for you. On Nebula, our streaming service, you can get access to all our episodes a week early. That's right. You'll never have to wait again to hear Scott and I debunk the latest ancient astronaut theory or get a movie fact wrong. But that's not all. Nebula is home to dozens of content creators we know you like, so you can find all your favorites in one place. Plus, we post content on there that you won't find anywhere else. And the best part? By signing up for Nebula at nebula.tv/probablynotaliens, you're directly supporting the show and both of us. So don't wait any longer. Join Nebula today and listen to the next episode right after this one.
So I guess we should talk about it, huh? Talk about what just happened.
Oh, man.
Off mic.
I kind of feel... So Scott and I spent the last hour...
A full hour. Recording this podcast.
I have a master's degree in American cultural studies, but we had to spend an hour navigating through the arcane folds of Ticketmaster.
Yep.
Because
exciting news, so, apparently.
Yeah, so
hopefully exciting.
It turns out Ancient Aliens is doing a tour. And like the intelligent
and
people we are.
We could not resist that opportunity.
Because one of their tour stops is in Kalamazoo, Michigan, which happens to be not super duper far from where I live, and apparently also happens to be like the town you grew up in as a little baby.
It's my old stomping grounds of Kalamazoo, Michigan. Well, really I lived in Portage, but Kalamazoo is a much bigger city around that area. My old stomping grounds, as they would say. And I get to go back there to watch live, in person, in concert.
Yeah.
I hope there are songs. Ancient Aliens. We got everyone's gonna be there. We got Giorgio Tsoukalos. We got David Childress. We got Dr. This is the
Octopus.
Thing. Doc Ock will be there. Dr. Travis Taylor. We are confused about this one because on the Ancient Aliens live tour website, there is one line, one paragraph that says Dr. Travis Taylor will not appear on shows between September 14th and September 24th. And then like two paragraphs later under tour dates, it says Dr. Travis Taylor will not appear on shows between September 14th and November 5th. Now, the date that we're going to go on is Kalamazoo, Michigan, as we said, November 3rd, which falls in between those dates. So it is unclear to us.
Quantum Dr. Taylor.
Quantum
Schrodinger's
Dr. Travis Taylor. We will find out if he will be there. But this is exciting for us. We were teasing the idea of maybe doing some sort of meetup for the podcast like a day or so beforehand. Maybe not in Kalamazoo specifically. But
turns out Kalamazoo, I imagine as a population of... not that I hate Kalamazoo. I'm sure it's a perfectly cromulent city.
No, cool people come from there. Yeah.
It does have a population of about 73,000. When one of the things that we can do is go to a meetup in one of the two cities that we would have to pass through in order to get there anyway, which would basically, Kalamazoo's exactly like halfway between Detroit and Chicago. So essentially,
we'll have to make our minds up about that one.
So we're going to, usually, you know, more professional podcasters would have this all figured out before we said it to the public, but we literally figured it out like right before this and we got too excited. So we will eventually decide whether we're going to do Chicago or Detroit. Maybe send a tweet to @PropsNotAliens to Team Detroit or Team Chicago.
Maybe I'll put like a form on probsonaliens.com. Maybe I'll have like a poll that's just like Chicago or Detroit. Vote here, and then everyone can vote for what city we should go to. I just think this is gonna be fun. I just think it's gonna be fun. We're gonna document it. We're gonna vlog it. We're gonna make a whole podcast episode about it, about our experience.
We could probably record the first It's Probably Not Aliens where we will just be beside each other.
That's true. Yeah. It'll be the first episode where it's actually you and me in the same room together, and
probably
not
us in some sort of Airbnb trying to not piss off the person who's trying to like just watch their watch Netflix in their room.
Sorry, we gotta talk about ancient. All they hear through the walls is us saying Ancient Aliens, and they know that we're here for an Ancient Aliens thing, and they're gonna think that we're not. They're gonna think that we're believers in it, and they're gonna be like, "Oh, these weirdos, these wackos that we have in our Airbnb."
We need to get pocket recorders and do man on the street things with people while they're like waiting to go in.
Now I know what you're wondering: are we going to meet the people? And the answer is no, because I don't think we could figure out how to do that on Ticketmaster. They had like a package for like a meet and greet and a photo, but like I didn't see those available, so it's possible they're already sold out. But also I don't know if I would want to. Like, it's already sort of weird to directly give these people money, but then to also give them more money and take a photo of it.
Yeah. If they do like when I saw Penn and Teller in Las Vegas, they did a sort of like meet and greet afterwards. And if they do something like that, I'm sure I would be like, "Hey, it's Tristan Johnson from the podcast It's Probably Not Aliens, where I debunk your shitty show week by week." Hi.
We'll tell them. Let's tell them that our podcast is called It's Probably Aliens, and then they'll just ignore the "not" is in parentheses, right? Yeah, so you can really just optional. Ignore that part. It's optional. So that's exciting. That's what we spent money on.
We go there and we somehow wrangle together It's Probably Not Aliens t-shirts and just wear them at the show and just be like, "Hey,
ooh, our glow in the dark Probs Not Aliens t-shirts that we keep talking about."
Mm-hmm.
That would be fun. We'll just pass them out to people. We won't do that. We have to make money somehow. Yeah. We can't just pass them out. Anyway,
don't say we never did anything for you, because we did have 1 month where we made a little bit of money off this podcast, and I guarantee we are going to spend all of that and then some to go to this live show in the middle of Michigan.
Thank you, last month's sponsors, and the only sponsors we'll ever have.
Yeah,
we're gonna take that money and we're gonna go see Ancient Aliens live. In concert.
Yeah, just living large off of our things. Living off of a podcast, this podcast, which is called It's Probably Not Aliens.
It's a great podcast, and we have fun doing it, and we're going to try a whole bunch of new things. And what is this podcast about, you might be wondering? Well, you know, it's a podcast where we look at Ancient Aliens, the TV show, and Ancient Astronaut Theory, and all that sort of stuff, and we, you know, sometimes debunk it. Sometimes we just sort of look into it, learn about the history of real life people, places, and things. And my name is Scott Nicewander. I know nothing. I didn't even know that Ancient Aliens was live until Tristan told me it was happening in Kalamazoo. And then we had to go. Then my world was rocked.
Mm-hmm. My name is Tristan Johnson. I researched the things, and I apparently have a Google alert for Ancient Aliens that made me aware that this was coming from a local Kalamazoo news website. So I'm the reason that this was inflicted upon Scott today. This show typically goes to live shows for Ancient Alien. No, this show debunks ancient astronaut theory, pseudoscience, pseudo history, pseudo archaeology, and all the stuff that is epitomized in the History Channel dramatization of the first few results of Google, known as Ancient Aliens.
That's right. Until we can beat them. Yeah. Until this show becomes first on Google. Do you think that'll happen? Probably not.
No.
Will it be first on AI Bing? Maybe.
Maybe.
Jury's still out.
What's it called? If our analytics are to be believed, if we were ever to do a live episode of this podcast, it would be in Seattle, because y'all's are crazy. Seattle is like by far the biggest. There must be some like real big fans of It's Probably Not Aliens in Seattle. So shout out to Seattle.
Dang.
But
I didn't even know that. Was that in our analytics? That's awesome.
Yeah, it's biggest markets in the one that stuck out as it's the highest, and also the highest that's not just LA and New York, you know? So,
well, is it, do you think it's because I keep talking about Grey's Anatomy?
Does Grey's Anatomy take place in Seattle?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think so. Pretty sure. Where does Grey's Anatomy take place? And don't you dare say a hospital, Google.
I was just imagining, because like the other Shonda Rhimes show that is designed to specifically give Tristan Johnson an aneurysm, because it is a show that is a very humongous quotation marks period piece, but has absolutely zero connection to anything that resembles human history. I watched about 5 minutes of it, and I saw costumes that spanned over 700 years of fashion history.
Costuming is like, not everyone knows the costuming is not great. You just have to roll with it.
And then I'm like, wait a minute. I know this period. There's supposed to be a whole lot more racism going on towards these people. What the fuck's going on here?
Oh, but it's not a historical thing. It's just like fun.
Yeah, it's gleefully romancing. Not historical.
Yes, Grey's Anatomy does take place in Seattle. I forgot that the hospital's original name was Seattle Grace. Duh.
Now, has anybody ever done a Shonda? You know how there's like that there was that theory a while back. I don't know how it's held up in time, but that theory that like all of the Pixar movies are in the same continuity.
Yeah.
Do they have a Shonda Rhimes version of this? Where like
some of them do.
Pretty
genuinely.
Little Liars. Is that her?
I have no idea.
No, not Pretty Little Liars.
I know that.
There's like a, what's it called? There's a murder one.
Sure.
And
some of them do genuinely take place in this. Like obviously Grey's Anatomy and Private Practice and Station 19 all take place in the same universe at least. I think they're maybe more, but those genuinely do because the characters cross over and such. This is not what this podcast is about.
No, Tristan.
We can't talk about Grey's Anatomy. I'm going to get lost. I'm going to go down a rabbit hole.
Okay, everybody, here, we'll get into what we're actually going to talk about. Bienvenue at It's Probably Not Aliens. C'est un podcast pour les...
What are you doing?
We are going to France today.
Oh, we're going to France. Oh, yeah. That's fun.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I knew you were speaking a different language. Is this the language you're learning with the language app with the owl?
It's the one that... So I'll tell you. So like my French education is very... I've learned, like, I can speak enough French fine, but it's very, like, I never really did well in classes for French. So all of the French I learned by, like, living in Quebec and talking to people and, you know, just having to do your day-to-day shit in French.
Right.
And so I can speak it decently.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, never in the mind what the previous sentence I said earlier. But I never like learned the rules. So I kind of use Duolingo to get myself like to fill in the gaps of stuff.
We're going to France.
We're going to a part. We're going to one of those parts of Europe where it's in one country. But if you said it was that country, they'd be very mad that you said it was that country.
Oh,
so we're going to Brittany.
Brittany.
Yes. So we're starting. This is the first episode. Well, this is the first episode of a new episode of Ancient Aliens, where we're getting into gods and claims that basically like giants and gods from mythology are all aliens and alien human hybrids. We're back on the alien human hybrids thing again.
All right. There was a tweet, because I'm unfortunately still browsing Twitter occasionally, about the what was the episode we did a while back about giants?
That was the one we did on the Nephilim, which I believe Nephilim. we had Trey the Explainer on for that one, I believe.
Yes, there was a tweet a couple days ago as of this recording that was like, we all need to prepare for when the Nephilim come back. What will you do? And people, I think someone tagged us in that tweet. Just so I guess I got to find out, what are we going to do when these gods and giants come back? How are we going to fight them? Is that what this episode? Are we learning how to fight them? What's this episode about? What are we talking about specifically?
What's interesting is that this episode of Ancient Aliens was the most confused and disjointed of them, where I had a lot of trouble parsing out like what to actually talk about, because it bounced around between so many like vague ideas. That I was just like, okay, so we're starting with a place called called the Kalnak Stones, which is apparently another staple of the ancient astronaut genre of things. So they're in Brittany, which is in France. Brittany is the sort of like northwestern jutting out peninsula in France.
Okay.
If you think about it as like the part of France that's jutting out and trying to touch Cornwall in the UK.
Gotcha. I am definitely not Googling what France looks like.
Okay.
My first thought was, oh, the boot. That's Italy. Oh, yes. I see what you're talking about. Yeah.
So, yeah, Brittany is Britain. So according to Ancient Aliens, these Karnak stones, which I gave you a picture of, if you see in the thing.
Yes, I'll describe them in a second.
Is a group of stones that they believe might have been a way of communicating with extraterrestrials. They pull out all the classics. Like, look at this line. They can all be seen from space. Like, or what's it called? They can't be seen from space. But like, they show these patterns that can only be seen from above.
I see.
And that it apparently has a geometric arrangement that predates the Pythagorean theorem by over 2,000 years.
Whoa!
And so they decided that this means that it's either a marker for aerial vehicles, either it's the French Nazca lines, or it's just emitting energy. If we've talked about energy in the past, it's just
the
energy.
Concept of energy, yeah.
And so they believe that it was made by humans.
Sure.
But with the guidance of extraterrestrials in some capacity because of all of its sophisticated
how cool it is. Let me describe these to people. So what I'm looking at in this photo is an aerial photo. So you can see it from above. There's a lot of what appear to be white stones sort of like just one by one in multiple lines. Not exact uniform like columns necessarily. There's some like broken space between them, but it honestly, if I were to like paint you a picture of what it genuinely looks like in like modern terms, it looks like a graveyard. Like it looks like these are headstones of, and yeah, they're just like headstones like next to each other in lines in this big lot. It just sort of looks like a graveyard to me, but they're called, I don't know, but maybe it's not.
Yeah, they're called the Alignement de Karnak, or the doesn't really translate super, but the Karnak alignments.
Alignments. Okay.
I'll give you another picture because they're bigger than they look from the sky.
Okay.
Because they are.
That's fair. That's fair. The sense of scale is hard here, but I guess they must be big because there are some buildings around here.
Yeah, they're decently big stones.
They're like taller than people are.
Yeah, yeah. And there's over 3,000 people or over 3,000 of these types of standing stones all over Brittany. And they include things like that, which are stone alignments. But as Ancient Aliens also talks about, they also have things called dolmens. They have things called tumuli and also just single standing stones. And these things are all over Brittany, but they're also found in some of the moorlands in the UK. And they're found in Scandinavia. They're a noted thing. And what they actually are is that they were stones that were erected by people in pre-Celtic Brittany between the years of 4500 BC and 3000 BC. So these things are older than Stonehenge by like thousands of years.
Wow.
They date back to the Neolithic era. So they were like Stone Age humans doing this.
Well, they'd have to be for stones, for stonework.
Yep.
Stone. Yeah. Once, that makes sense.
Once stone was gone, they moved to
no more stones.
Yeah.
That we were out of the Stone Age, Bronze Age.
That's when we ran out of stones. That's when the earth stopped having stones.
Yeah.
There's a great British skit that's about, like it's a stone napper who's getting a bronze like initiation day where like the guy from bronze is coming by to teach them how to make stuff out of bronze instead of stone. And he's like he's being awesome. And like stone was fine for like, you know, or stone was fine for my dad and it's fine for like people before me. Why do I have to move to bronze?
Yeah.
But yeah, this place though, the Alignements de Karnak are basically the largest known collection of standing stones on Earth. Lines spread across about 3 kilometers. And I'm realizing I have to turn that into
it's close enough.
Kilometers in miles in America miles. 1.86 miles.
Okay.
They're broken down into major stone rows called Menek, Kamehio, and Keliskan. So there's various different beliefs about what these things are. One of the most famous myths about them is that the wizard Merlin turned a group of Roman soldiers into stone and that's what the stones of Karnak are.
Oh, cool.
But
good on you, Merlin.
Yeah. But what they are actually made of is granite that's been taken from local outcroppings of stone in the region. Like they weren't quarried or anything like that. They were just moved and aligned in a certain way.
Okay.
Some people say that they were created by aliens or as a way to detect earthquakes or to look at the skies. But really,
like if they fall over, you're like,
guess it was an earthquake.
Ground shaking.
Yeah. But it does seem that the actual determination of what these things were for is actually not 100% shown. There's some that think it might be a man-made calendar, or they might be a funeral. They might serve some sort of funerary purpose, which would make it a huge necropolis.
That makes sense. That's sort of what I said.
Mm-hmm. The more widely recognized, though, is that it is a funerary practice. So this might be a necropolis or graveyard.
Yeah.
Because it's old enough that very few of the bones, if any, would have actually survived.
That makes sense. You did say it was quite old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you think about it, when it was built in 4500 BCE, that puts it at nearly 7,000 years old.
Yeah. Which is that's old.
Very old. That is older than the pyramids. That is very old.
Extremely old, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The only thing that we see that is like close to that in age is something like Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, which is, we talked about briefly in our episode, our two-parter on Graham Hancock, but we'll probably return to in an episode in the future. I think somebody mentioned that they were watching Ancient Aliens and came across a Göbekli Tepe reference, so we'll get there.
Ooh, we'll get there.
Mm-hmm. The other things that are in this area, though, are broken down into essentially three major types of Neolithic stone crafts. So basically, people in the Stone Age in this period, in this sort of pre-Celtic period, like all these people, like Britannese people and people in like the UK and in Ireland were like the progenitors of Celtic culture. They had a habit of moving big rock and putting them in places.
They love that.
Mm-hmm.
That's like their favorite thing to do. Well, they didn't invent TV yet. They didn't invent streaming services.
Exactly. So one of the things that they make is something called a tumuli or a tumulus, mm-hmm. which is a mound of earth and stones that are raised over a grave. And in Karnak, there are some really large burial mounds there that date to around the same time as the alignments, known collectively as the Karnasayan tumuli.
Mm.
And they think that these were probably the burials of elites. Some researchers actually call them divine kings.
Oh, I see. The big shots were buried here, potentially.
Yeah. And they've gone by the nicknames of the Tumulus of Saint-Michel, Tumiac, and Manéo-Choraic, which are big burial mounds. The Tumulus of Saint-Michel was probably built between 5000 BCE and 3400 BCE and takes up about 35,000 cubic meters or 46,000 cubic yards of stone and earth to build. So these are big, big papas.
Yeah.
Also, digging into these things, we have found some signs of like rich furniture, and we've also found some like artifacts that imply that this might have been somebody's tomb, like axes, stone axes, and also beads and things like that.
Why do those point to?
Well, because in archaeology, you can typically find that a lot of important people were typically buried with their prized possessions. And if you were somebody very powerful, you would tend to be buried with more of your stuff to show how powerful you were in life. So they dig up this thing that is typically, we've seen in other places, used as a burial site, and find lots of axes and find lots of like things like beads and such. And that implies that there was probably an important person or important people buried there.
People just loved axes.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, look at how cool my axes are. Yeah.
Another tumulus was found to have over 100 stone axes and pendants and beads. So these are huge things. These are pretty big deals.
Axes were so important.
Think about it in context of that time. In the times of stone napping, you don't have swords yet. So metal's not a thing.
Don't got swords.
So an axe doubles as a survival tool, as a hunting tool, and as a weapon.
Yeah.
So it is everything.
And I got 100 of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's how important I am.
Precisely. Another kind of construction that shows up here are things called dolmens. And dolmens are a kind of construction that shows up across the world. It's when you take two stones and then put a big stone on top of it. So
like a Stonehenge looks like.
Yeah, like a Stonehenge.
Yeah.
But these typically are marked tombs in Brittany, but are in various different states because they've been eroded or because of different things. There's a whole bunch of them in the area. And typically in the areas are typically used to be the site of tombs.
They look like little doorways.
Mm-hmm.
So is that like crossing over, like a sign of like, you know, you cross over from this life to the next. Here's a little doorway.
There might be theories that say that, but nothing can be confirmed because obviously we don't have any writing from that time. So archaeologists would probably have to answer that in something that would have been a bit more depth than I could have done for this one.
You know, axes are really good for a lot of things. They are not good riding instruments.
It's true.
Yeah.
But dolmens actually also come from the Neolithic period. And the most common place where they're found in the world is actually the Korean Peninsula, where over 40,000 of all dolmens on Earth are located.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Is there like a percentage of what?
40%.
How much that is?
40% of all dolmens on Earth are in the Korean Peninsula. Or about 35,000 are apparently there.
Wow.
But the ones in Western Europe that we're talking about here are the oldest known ones. And
okay.
The thing, though, is that we don't exactly know in this part of Europe why they were erected or who erected them.
It's a mystery.
Mm-hmm. So these things also exist in the region. And the other are things called menhirs, which are basically just standing stones, upright, solid, straight stones.
I'm getting that the stem, like men, has to do with, because there's dolmens, there's menhirs.
You like stone men?
Is men a stem word for like stone or rock?
Could be. Men. I believe these come from French for the most part. So
it could be mohir. I don't know.
Possibly mohir. The thing is that these words don't really sound like French. They're
no. Not when I say them, for sure.
I'm not exactly sure where the etymology of them. Dolmen is apparently a French word that replaced the English archaeological term cromlech. So.
Oh yeah, I've heard of those cromlechs.
You have?
No.
Okay.
Of course I have it.
But the menhirs, these upright stones, can also find their origins in like the Bronze Age in Western Europe. But also, they're found in Africa and Asia. You'll find them around similar stones and things like that. This is like kind of what you would expect for like being done by. This is the kind of stuff that was being used by druids. Druids being the priesthood of the ancient Celts, and they were probably a site where people did acts of sacrifice, human sacrifice. They used to hang people as like a sort of form of human sacrifice in these regions. You probably like one of the most famous you probably recognize is like what are called bog bodies, which is that in these like
bodies.
Yeah, in bogs you'll find like the bodies of people who have like been found with like nooses around their necks, and it's this form of human sacrifice was common in ancient Europe for a very long time. There's it's widespread practice amongst like the ancient Norse, and people were all slightly connected with each other.
Huh.
Here we go. The word menhir was adopted from the French by 19th century archaeologists and is a combination of two words from the language Breton, which is main and here. And Breton is the language spoken in Brittany, and it's actually closer to, it's closer related to Celtic than it is French.
Gotcha.
Which means it has more like linguistic ties to like pre-Christian Europe or pre-Christian Britain. Yeah,
I'm still looking up the etymology because I love this stuff. Etymology.
We don't know too much about the people who made the menhirs, but they did bury their dead, and they did have skills in farming, pottery, stone making, stone napping, and jewelry making.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are engraved with art and have anthropomorphic features on them. Some have images of axes, plows, shepherd's crooks, and yokes, which means that they're probably like, you know, images depicting life in the period that they lived in. And in the past, and this is where ancient aliens got it from, during the Middle Ages, early Christians believed that during the Middle Ages, the general accepted belief was that these were built by giants who lived before the biblical flood.
Ah, we're back at the giants.
Yeah, that's basically where we're at. and also many early Christians also destroyed or defaced these things. Because they were determined to be pagan idols and stuff like that. So very early Christian. And also, there wasn't as much respect for history back then, like how parts of the Colosseum were torn down to just build buildings in Rome. They would tear these things down to get stone to build other things. So
we need stone.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we going to get some? Well, here's a bunch right here.
Yeah. The only thing that we can really tell about them is that these that they likely were seaborne people, because we tend to find these menhirs around coasts or on islands or on peninsulas like Brittany.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And this all brings us back to alignments.
Alignments. Now, you got me with that word at the beginning, alignments. Because like from the photos, they are definitely in they're in multiple lines, like rows of lines.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I don't. The word alignment makes me feel very like astrology or something like that. Is it like the planets have aligned or something?
Yeah, I mean, they're just, it's a line. They are stones erected in a line. They're aligned with each other.
Right, but yeah. Like, what does it mean in this context? Does it mean anything more significant than the fact that it's just, yep, we put them in a line?
Well, this is the thing. We don't actually know. And this is the part, this is the alien of the gaps argument that comes up a lot on Ancient Aliens, where we don't know the answer to why something happened, and so the implication is that it's aliens. When, you know, the answer is just that we don't know, because, you know, what we don't know about people who lived in the Neolithic age is humongous. 19th century people described them as a temple and that they might have had spiritual significance, but as far as I can tell, that any things to think that they aligned with like planets or stars have fallen flat. And for the most part, there isn't really a widely accepted theory as to what the point of these alignments are.
We just lined them up. We liked lines. We still like lines.
And there might be some, we can get into this like a little bit, but like a lot of the claims of Ancient Aliens that like claim like they knew about Pythagoras and Pythagorean theorem. My two answers to that are, one, it would not surprise me if they knew about those kinds of things. People who are able to move stones like this probably had some idea of Pythagorean stuff.
I learned about it in middle school, right? I mean, it's easy stuff.
It's not it definitely would be very interesting to find out that Neolithic people had some concept of that kind of geometry, but it's not like it's not like they had laser guns, you know. This isn't like breaking our concept of like what humans are capable of by thinking that people in the Stone Age might have had some concept of Pythagorean theorem. The second is like, I don't know. If you watch the Ancient Aliens episode, they're doing a lot of work to make that attachment. And at the end of the day, what they are talking about is triangles. That it very vaguely makes it. And there's very much like you see the lines, and then they're like, if you look at this line, and then you add two more lines, it's a triangle. And I'm like,
it's a triangle.
It's very much.
There's one thing that Ancient Aliens cannot stop talking about. It's triangles.
Yeah. How on the Piri Reis map, how like. It eerily fits on our map, and like this map that looks nothing like North America then gets laid over, and then they put the real one, and it's like, wait, like this map fate is really disproving your point. There's a lot of cases where they're like, look at like this pattern that the alignments of Karnak have, and it's like not very convincing at all.
They like to have to go to edit some sort of like warp tool to be like, yeah, if you don't pay attention to how we're editing this, it definitely looks legit.
And even if it is legit, like, it would not surprise me that even without having to know advanced like trigonometry or I guess that's basic trigonometry, but without having to know anything about trigonometry, the idea of making a shape that's like a triangle where each side of the triangle is a side of a square is not a wild it's not a wild thing to be like an aesthetic symbol that somebody thought of.
Yeah, is basic.
Yeah.
Geometry.
It would also be more interesting if these were an example of an upart or an out of place artifact that this is like weird and like you don't see it in other places. But really, it's the biggest example, but it's not the only example. And the fact that they exist in other places with similar types of design show that there's at least a context for it that makes a lot of sense. Stone rows have shown up in all sorts of places and have lots of different types of designs. And they do seem to show a pattern that probably show the migration patterns or the sort of, as I mentioned, they were probably tied to the ocean or tied to the sea in some way. And so you see them in parts of the British Isles, in parts of Scandinavia, and in northern France, all places that are connected by like the North Sea and English Channel.
Yeah, that's fair.
And like, you know, you can probably see like ancient Norse people had a thing about rune stones where they built like erect stones that they wrote things on. Which is always very amusing because the Norse were very into writing about things about where they were, but they were also very they're very blunt. They were like people will like find this like antler or something that's got like runes carved into it, and they're like, what does this mean? And they translate it into, and it says like antler.
Yeah.
Or Mia told me about a very funny one where they found these runes in this very high, out of place, like out of reach location, and they couldn't figure out what it means. Then they finally translated, and it said, this is very high. And it's like that in many ways speaks like to how the Norse people were.
It's like messages in Dark Souls where it's just like, yeah, try finger butthole.
It speaks a lot to me. It speaks a lot to the very direct minds of the ancient Norse. But it shows that like these kind of like stone monolith things are fairly common in these sort of culturally contiguous regions around here.
Oh yeah, I mean, to talk about another show that I think I've mentioned once or twice around here, Outlander, is the whole thing is magic stones, Craignadune, in Scotland. So yeah.
You can't go I've been to the UK. Like, you can't go around the UK without finding old druidic stones. I remember because I went and saw some, and then when I saw them, all of a sudden I was like, you know, like walking around them, and then there was some sheep just hanging out, and I was like, oh, hi,
just
sheep.
Some sheep. Hi, sheep. Sheep look. Wait, hold on. Do you think the sheep put the stones there?
They're the
aliens. Sheep are aliens.
We're the first animal we cloned, right? So
we're continuing to add to our list. Like, one of the first early episodes is that, like, yeah, geese are aliens. Sheep are aliens. Any animal with a double E, that's an alien.
That's how they know. That's how they identify each other.
It's because when you find out they're an alien, you go, E.
That's their language.
That's their language. They say E.
Yeah.
Dolphins don't have a double E, but they do say E a lot. Mm-hmm. So think about that.
Yeah. And I thought I would also use this as an opportunity to talk a little bit about the region, because Brittany is a very interesting place that doesn't, I feel like in some of the ways that like in Europe we have, or outside of Europe, we have this idea that a lot of European countries are cultural monoliths. And when we think of France, we think that everybody there is French. I'm hoping that there's a lot of places where, like, or you would probably guess, like, we know in the English world, like, we know in the UK that there's Scotland, there's Ireland, and, like, there's the Welsh, and then there's, like, there, if you want to give me more granular, like, different kingdoms in England, like Cornish people have a completely different culture and their own accent, and, like,
it gets
all very complex. But then when it comes to other countries in Europe, we don't think of it like that when, you know, a lot of places do have him. Probably the most famous that you might know is that in Spain, there's a whole bunch of like different nations within Spain itself, like Catalonia or the Basque region or...
I was thinking about Spain. Yeah.
And so, and France has these as well. You know, there's Burgundians, there's the Marseillais, there's like all sorts of different groups of people that kind of have their own thing. And Brittany is, compared to even other parts of France, which France is actually, compared to other European countries, has done a lot of work to centralize and culturally unify the country in not a kind way, I should say. But like,
yeah,
the whole thing is that if you go to France, one of the things about France is that it's like super, super centralized. Like,
okay,
all railroads go through Paris. It's wild. But anyways, but Brittany is fairly culturally unique in a lot of different ways. It used to be a Roman province called Armorica, and after that became an independent kingdom before it was demoted to being a duchy.
That does sound like a French person trying to say America.
Armorica. Yeah. What did you say to me, you American podcast host? Hey.
You know how like French people say hey.
Yeah, the Romans referred to this place as Armorica, and after the fall of the Roman Empire, it became its own kingdom, the Kingdom of Brittany, and then became the Duchy of Brittany, and it really only joined France in 1532.
Okay. Seems late.
Yeah. But also, Brittany has its own cultural identity. It's one of six Celtic nations, and it even has today a nationalist movement that tries to either get greater autonomy within France or even seeks independence from France.
Ooh.
Yeah. It has a cultural mix of being both Celtic, but also it was a site where a lot of Viking invasions happened in the 10th century. So there's a strong, like the whole northern coast of France had many like Viking raids, much like in Britain. And so there's a lot of like Viking stuff intertwined with it.
Mm-hmm.
In the 14th century, the English kings also tried to claim the French throne. And in the Breton War of Succession, they tried to use this to instigate a fight between the House of Blois.
Blois?
Yeah. Don't you know the House of Blois?
The House of Blois. Yeah, I know it.
I tell you that I once got laughed at by my in-laws because I referenced to a street called Joliet Street, and they were like, that's Joliet. And I was like, the Louisiana Purchase was a mistake.
That's funny.
But so the House of Blois fighting with the house with their another Montfort. Montfort. Yeah, the House of Blois fighting the House of Montfort.
Yeah, so like it was a big like thing. There's also they were also involved in something called the Mad War or La Guerre Folle. Which was this medieval conflict between a different, basically a bunch of different feudal lords fighting against the King of France during the Regency, where Princess Anne of Beaujou was the regent of France after Louis the 11th died. But the war did not last long; it only lasted about 3 years, and it did not end well for the fact that France exists shows that it did not go well for them.
Yeah, makes sense.
But yeah, Brittany joined the duchies of Lorraine, Albret, Orange, and Angoulême.
Sure.
With like, you know, the outside help of Castile, which is Spain and England, and the Holy Roman Empire, which is basically Germany. Either way, war ended. The problem, though, is that after that war happened and it became subsumed, or at least it became denounced down to a duchy and basically got subsumed by France under.
What's a duchy? You said that a couple times. What's a duchy?
So a duchy is there's basically like levels. I'm using like Crusader Kings to really flesh this out. But basically, like in British nobility or in European nobility, there is like a sort of hierarchy of different noble titles.
Okay.
And so like at the bottom, you might have like a baron who is somebody who owns a castle. Then you might have above that a count, somebody who rules over a county. If you rule over several counties, you might be called a duke or a duchess, and you'd rule over a duchy. And typically you might have other counts that are sort of like basically all of European politics in this period worked like a pyramid scheme. So so a duke would have like a couple counts that are sort of pledged under them that would pledge to them. And then a duke would be pledged to a king. And
it's not a pyramid scheme. It's a reverse funnel. Let's say right?
And then above that, a person who rules over several kings is technically an emperor.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of like, but basically, yeah, it was demoted to a duchy and no longer a kingdom, and eventually split into different departments. Basically when France modernized after the French Revolution in 1789, and it lost a lot of its population in the 19th century after a bad economic recession, and basically was like split into a bunch of things until it was reconstituted as the region of Brittany in 1956.
That's fairly recent.
Yeah. And now apparently, Brittany is doing very well and it's actually a place of like economic growth, which I think is really interesting.
Cool. Yeah.
In this region, French is still the official languages, but there are two regional languages that are still spoken in some circles. One is Breton and the other is Gallo. Breton is a Celtic language that has Brittonic roots, and it's basically it's considered an endangered language by UNESCO, but it is a like sort of language that is similar to like Gaelic and like kind of like Irish and Welsh, well not Welsh, but Irish and Scotch Gaelic and stuff like that.
Gotcha. So let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Like a year or two ago, when there was a hashtag about Britney Spears saying like free Britney, did that have a different meaning, do you think, online for the region of Britney?
Britney, let's see. No, because Brittany, the name is typically Brittney. This is spelled Brittany.
Okay. But you know people on Twitter must have done a typo at some point and done free Brittany.
Free the Britons.
Yeah. And then
free the Britons.
People in France were like, hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah. What's up? Yeah,
flying their little flag. But yeah, the other language, Gallo, is apparently also is also spoken to a little bit, although Breton is now being revived in some circles in Brittany. So and that has apparently been at the expense of Gallo. It's a language that had no written language before the 20th century and is not Celtic, but does have some Celtic influence. It's more of like a indigenous language of the region. And it's estimated to have as few as 28,000 and as many as 200,000 speakers. And you can take it optionally in school there.
Cool.
Let me see if I can find its roots. Because I wonder if it has anything to do with
tap into your ancestors.
Because a lot of like what would be today France in like Roman times was called Gaul.
Mm.
It does seem to have, it's a romance language as well, just like French. Okay.
What makes something a romance language?
Basically,
just it sounds hot.
It has origins in Latin.
Oh, I see.
So yes. So like Italian, Spanish, Portuguese, and French, and Romanian for some reason are all like romance languages.
Hmm.
But that's sort of the region. The site itself is apparently like the Alignement de Carnac is still a controversial site, mostly because in an effort to preserve it, the authorities have essentially made it so that you can't visit it. They've walled it off, or they've blocked it off. And that is after many centuries of it basically being neglected and sort of falling apart due to erosion.
Mm.
Even though it's been like, there's been people writing about it since the 1700s, and it's like a very famous part of like the prehistory of Brittany.
Yeah, it's been around forever, it seems like. But I guess everything will, you know, everything washes away through time.
Except for rocks, I guess.
Except for rocks. But I guess are they arguing that they're trying to protect them because they're
trying to protect
fragile?
People from going there and knocking them over or just adding to the erosion. They started protecting the site in the 1870s, but it still has a lot of like restrictions on public access. I think you can still go. It's just tougher.
You gotta know a guy. Yeah.
And it was just sort of like public land that was then bought up by the French government in the early 20th century, redeveloped, and now has deteriorated even more because of tourism. Lovely. But they changed that because they restricted public access in 1991 after the Heritage Ministry launched Mission Carnac and focused on developing scientific and technical studies of their plan and trying to figure out how to conserve and develop the area.
Mm-hmm.
The problem, though, is that the restrictions of public access, where this was land that was used for like grazing and that was used by like taking this under the French government, the locals have wanted to be involved in its maintenance and restoration. And there's been debate over like what role locals should have in their own cultural heritage.
Mm-hmm.
And so apparently this is still a topic of debate amongst locals and groups within the Carnac region. But I did find out that one of their conservation tricks has been that they actually have been allowing locals to graze their sheep there in order to control control the weeds and stop the grass from eroding the... Yeah.
It's them. It's their home. They're claiming it back. These are our rocks. We put them here. We're the sheep we're aliens. That's basically their confession that they're aliens.
Yeah, the sheep, they didn't want to go there to graze. They wanted to go home.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that's where the energy is.
That's where the energy is. Good job, sheep. We're on to you.
But yeah, that's the Carnac alignments. There wasn't a whole lot that Ancient Aliens claimed about it, but I thought it was like this interesting little tidbit.
It's cool.
Of French and like, you know, European history that I don't think we've gone to France before on this show. So I thought it was cool to cover.
I don't think so. No. First time going to France and we uncovered a bigger conspiracy about sheep.
Yes, this is this one goes all the way to the bottom.
Oh, no. The sheep were there to control the weeds. Weeds also has a double E in it. Plant aliens?
Weeds
you decide.
Are invasive. Or no, they're not invasive. Weeds are usually native plants trying to take rid of your invasive plants. But so, you know, you smoke weed and you see aliens.
Let's think about that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know. My body is pure for the Lord. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Probably Not Aliens. If you liked it, you can follow this show at Probs on Aliens, where we are going to post a lot of, presumably a lot of updates about our plan to see the show live and where you can find us. And if you want to go hang out with us and whatnot. But until then, if people wanted to hear more of you and even see you,
oh my,
this doesn't have an audio, this doesn't have a video component, this podcast, it's only audio. But if they want to see you, Tristan, where can people go do that?
They can go to Step Back on YouTube or Nebula. It's a place where I talk about history and why it's important for understanding the world today. I have a pretty successful recent video about Meatball Ron and why Meatball Ron is not a good guy and the bad ideas, the dangerous ideas that he's putting forward. Scott, if I wanted to, I don't know if it'll be out by this time, probably. If I wanted to know about YouTube plagiarism after somebody's been Illuminati on the internet, where would I go?
You can go to my YouTube channel, NerdSync, NERDSYNC. You know, I was like, I'm going to make shorter rapid fire videos. And then this very first one I'm doing ended up ballooning to over 30 minutes long.
Scott.
It's because it's about creativity and art and editing and like
all of your videos about creativity and art and editing.
But how can I not talk about that for so long? I promise I'll make shorter ones later.
Emily needs to come down and spray you with a bottle of water every time you take too long on these things.
And then if you want to continue supporting this show, you can do so at nebula.tv/probablynotaliens. You can listen to an episode early.
Yeah, next week's episode will be out now as you're listening to this.
It's up now, presumably, if I edited it in time, which usually I do. So go check it out. And thank you to everyone for writing reviews of this show. Did you know, I've been getting emails about this. If you listen on Spotify, it asks you like after each episode, like, how did you enjoy that episode? And I guess we can prompt Spotify to ask people specific questions if we wanted to, like per episode. So maybe I'll ask people, maybe on Spotify, I'll be like Detroit or Chicago.
I feel like we're going to be starting some sort of Midwestern civil war over this.
We're going to start a war. Either way, thank you to everyone who wrote nice things on Spotify when you get those prompts. I didn't even know that was a thing. So it just automatically happens. I had no choice. If they're annoying, I also apologize because I had no idea. But thank you to everyone who actually wrote some stuff. It makes me happy.
Yeah, you guys are awesome.
And thank you for continuing to tell your friends about the show. It's how it really grows. And a really simple place to send people is a website called probsdownaliens.com, where presumably by this point I'll have a poll up there where you can vote on Chicago or Detroit in the blood war that we are instigating, where we might do a meetup.
Which place you get to hang out with us in a pub.
Yep. That's it. Until next time, my name is Scott Nicewander.
I'm Tristan Johnson, and the truth is out there. Probably. I had to do that one.
You had to do it. The sheep made you do it. It was orders from the mother sheep.
Oh, no.